Hour number two of our radio program. That's right. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. So Yom Kippur was Friday into Saturday. So I had to fast starting sundown on Friday. So on Friday, I elected to get everyone pizza around here. And we got a bunch of pies from the industry, which was great. I don't know about you, Stu. I got home on Friday at about 6:30. And I had some time to kill before we had the Dodgers-Padres game. And I turned on Barstool Sports Advisors because I love watching Stu Feiner give out his picks with Big Cat. And they had Brandon Walker on this week. And I haven't done this in a while, this early. But I passed out. And I just fell asleep on the couch for at least an hour and a half. Because I think I was, like, in a food coma off three slices of pizza. So, Stu, I have to ask you, I don't know what they're putting in their sauce in the industry. Did you snooze a little bit on Friday? Were you stuffed on Friday?
Yeah, so I didn't snooze, but I usually eat dinner around 7 o'clock when I get home, and I was not hungry till like 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Oh, you're crazy.
And even then, I had a little snack. That was it. I was full.
We had that pizza, what, like 4:30, 5 o'clock?
Yeah. Not that.
You were going to go have dinner after that?
Yeah, there's no way. There's no chance of me having dinner after that.
So I'm a little concerned. It's a big sports day today. The Mets are playing the Dodgers right now. The Dodgers are up in the NLCS 1-0 after the Mets got blown out last night. The Dodgers are going to go a bullpen game today. The Mets are going to go with Sean Manaea. We also have Yankee baseball tonight up against the Guardians, game one of the ALCS. And then Monday Night Football, Jets and the Buffalo Bills. I'm actually going to the Jets-Bills game tonight, covering the game. So if you want to check out my social media, at Zach Gelb, Twitter and Instagram, ZACHGLBL, to give you all the behind-the-scenes during the game, and then after the game, we'll get into the locker room and talk to some players. But I just got the menu sent to me by the Jets of what they're serving in the press box, and I'm concerned after Friday falling asleep if I will now fall asleep in the press box, because we just had three little slices of pizza on Friday, and I fell asleep. Here is the press box menu tonight for the Jets-Bills game, Stu. Strip loin, mashed potatoes, beer-battered onion rings, dinner rolls and butter, seasonal vegetables, got to have some healthy munch in there, Caesar salad, chicken noodle soup, Italian chicken cutlet sandwich powder, candy bars, corn tortilla chips, salsa roja, vegetable dip, marinated grilled chicken breasts, hot dogs if you want them, and there's ketchup, onions, and sauerkraut, beef sliders, cheeseburger sliders, french fries, house-made trail mix, individual bags of popcorn, warm churros and chocolate and caramel sauce, bunch of ice cream novelties they have it listed as, coffee and bottled water. Now, I'm going to try to portion control there, but they have 14 freaking food items.
You're definitely going to need the coffee afterwards.
Post-game press conference. Aaron Rodgers. I'm going to be in a food coma, I'll tell you that. So, going to be a busy, busy night for your boy. A lot of eating and watching football. Alrighty. Let me get to two players that I think should be right at the forefront of the MVP conversation. What I've seen so far through the first 6 weeks of football, I don't think there is a quarterback right now that should be in the lead on the MVP odds. I just don't. You know, I'll pull up the odds in just a second. I think I saw that Patrick Mahomes was the MVP front runner. Yeah, plus 250. Stu, I don't like nothing against Mahomes. Everyone would die to have Patrick Mahomes as their quarterback. But Mahomes has not had this great statistical season. That defense has been better than the offense. And it kind of just shows you how no quarterback has really taken the baton and run with it through the first six games of the season. If Mahomes could be, it's weird to say he's playing above average ball, but for him, he's playing above average ball. And right now, he's the odds-on favorite to win the MVP at plus 250. That's wild to me, Stu.
It can't be. I mean, I guess it can, but you just look at the stats alone, and I know the MVP is kind of like a stats award, and Mahomes just does not have those kind of stats right now.
Like, I'm looking at the first Let's see. How many quarterbacks do they list before we get a non-quarterback? Oh, my God. This is... There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 quarterbacks that are listed with higher odds than the first non-quarterback to win the MVP. The MVP has turned out to just be like a disgraceful award where it's, okay, let's just call it who's the best quarterback in the league. An offensive player of the year kind of now turned into who's the best non-quarterback in the league. Mahomes is at plus 250. Lamar Jackson is plus 550. Josh Allen's at plus 900. C.J. Stroud is at plus 650. Jaden Daniels at plus 1300. Brock Purdy's at plus 1300. Sam Darnold's at plus 1400. Joe Burrow's at plus 1600. Jared Goff at plus 1800. Jordan Love at plus 2000. Jalen Hurts at plus 3,000. Kirk Cousins at plus 3,000. Baker Mayfield at plus 3,000. Kyler Murray at plus 4,000. Dak Prescott at plus 4,500. And Caleb Williams is at plus 5,000. The first non-quarterback listed, depending on which book you look at, Derrick Henry at either plus 5,000 or plus 6,000. Derrick Henry, to me, right now, if I had to pick an offensive player to win the MVP, he would be the MVP award winner. Now, we haven't seen an MVP be won by a running back since 2012. But Derrick Henry is first in carries right now, first in rushing yards, and first in rushing touchdowns. And I don't know about you, Stu. At the end of last season, let me just have your take here before we found out they got Derrick Henry, because I think this is most people. When the Baltimore Ravens had the number one seed, dominated the regular season, and then in the AFC Championship game, when the Kansas City Chiefs basically had Patrick Mahomes be a game manager and the Baltimore Ravens offense was a no-show, do you think that we would have been expecting, after six games in the 2024 season, for the Baltimore Ravens to have one of those teams that we believe in to get to the Super Bowl this year? Would you have thought that?
I would have said no. I would have said that the Ravens had their best chance of getting past the Chiefs and winning a Super Bowl last year, and they failed.
And I'm the same way as you. And I was someone, for years, I have defended Lamar Jackson. And I thought the postseason narrative about Lamar Jackson was too small of a sample size, but last year is when that changed. But look where we are, and I understand football's wide open this year, and there's a ton of parity. Through six games of this season so far, in 6 weeks of this season, Baltimore is back in that circle of trust to go out to a Super Bowl this year. And when I look at all the teams in the AFC right now, and we'll see what happens with Buffalo tonight, but the way that Buffalo's played the last 2 weeks, you know, you look around the Bengals, even in a win, I'm not even all that encouraged by them. The Texans are a team that, hey, they probably are the next one up if it's not Baltimore. But I look at Baltimore, they're on offense right now that scares the crap out of me in a good way. And if the Chiefs are going to basically be okay on offense and they're going to be defense first, I could see Baltimore this year scoring 21, 24 points in an AFC Championship game and taking down Kansas City because of what Derrick Henry has brought to this team. And I know they've lost this year. Right, they didn't get a toe down with Likely, and they could have beat the Chiefs or at least had that game. Oh, they would have gone for two and gone for the win, so maybe they don't get it there. And they blew a game up against the Raiders that they should have never lost. But I look at Derrick Henry. He has changed my outlook with this Baltimore Ravens team. And I said this last week, and I know, right, you're Raiders. To me, I don't get this stuff with Devontae Adams. Now that Aiden O'Connell's playing, that's a reason why he may stay, because he likes Aiden O'Connell. Like, does the media and do the Raiders just think we're idiots? The Raiders haven't got what they wanted yet for Devontae Adams. That's why they haven't made a trade. But the Baltimore Ravens, at this point, like, go pounce. Who gives a rat's ass about a second-round pick? I give up a second-round pick in a heartbeat. It's at the end of the second round if you're Baltimore for Devontae Adams. And could you imagine with the way that they line up now with Zay Flowers, Mark Andrews finally found a pulse again last week. You have Isaiah Likely. You got Derrick Henry. You got Lamar Jackson. If you had Davante Adams to that, man, I would easily, I picked the Ravens to go to the Super Bowl before that. You know, headed into the season. I just didn't want to pick Kansas City. But you would have a legitimate case to make for Baltimore not only get to the Super Bowl, but win it if they go get Davante Adams. But this idea that, what, there's 15 or 16 quarterbacks on the odds in Vegas right now that have higher odds to win the MVP than Derrick Henry? That's a joke. And I'm sure, right, Lamar and Derrick Henry will split votes. But if you made me vote for one offensive player right now, it would be Derrick Henry. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, Stu, and I'm sorry to do this to you, because you bring up Davante Adams talking about the Ravens. I will also now bring up the Raiders once again, because the defensive player I'm going to name just tormented your team yesterday. How about that performance from TJ Watt, Stu, where he didn't even register a sack in the game?
I was just going to say that. He didn't even have a sack and he wrecked the game.
But the two fumbles that he forced, I thought I was watching Peanut Tillman for a second play defensive end with the punching that he was doing yesterday. That was just sick. Absolutely sick. And I know Justin Fields played a good game yesterday, but the Steelers' offense has not been stupendous. And this has been a team with the Steelers that their best player by a country mile and their most valuable player by a country mile is TJ Watt. And this dude is the best defensive player in football. And if I had an MVP vote right now, I'd be mulling it over, not even a quarterback. It would be, do I go with Derrick Henry or do I go with TJ Watt? But man, Stu, like you probably went to sleep last night and you probably woke up in the middle of the night with a sweat, a cold sweat, with the way that TJ Watt was just all up in your team's grill the other day. That was wild.
No, and it was. And the two fumbles, one was at the goal line as the Raiders were trying to score, and the other one was basically like almost in the other side of the field, almost in the other red zone. So it set up the Steelers nicely for a touchdown. It was just incredible. He wrecks the game. I don't know if there's a defensive player in the last 10 years that wrecks the game like he does. Just single-handedly just takes over the game. Like, there are great pass rushers we've seen the past 10 years or so, but just unbelievable.
All right, I'm distracted because I'm watching the Mets-Dodgers game. Lead-off home run. Francisco Lindor. Oh, my God. So you just said in the last 10 years, you don't know if there's a defensive player that destructs the game like TJ Watt?
Yeah.
You know what? I think he's better than his brother, too.
I do, too.
Who won a defensive player of the year three times? You know? Think about that. Three times. He is just, he's a freak. And Myles Garrett is great. And I think you're splitting hairs, but I'd rather have TJ Watt slightly over Myles Garrett. Chris Jones has had, you know, he doesn't get enough national respect, but he has had championship moments and he's made big plays in those Super Bowls. But yeah, TJ Watt is one of the greatest defensive players I've ever seen. You know, the only one, here's the obvious one. There is a player that has been more destructive than him, Aaron Donald. With what Aaron Donald was able to do, and he also, like, TJ Watt hasn't won a championship. Aaron Donald won a championship and took matters into his own hands. Now, not a defensive end, but he took matters into his own hands in that Super Bowl, pushing back the line and then going on out there and forcing that throw early when you had Ja'Marr Chase wide open down the right sideline. So Donald's actually the first guy that comes to mind, but you could make it, like, you could say something like that. It's not crazy. That's how damn great TJ Watt is. So this is going to be difficult. I have not had, well, that's not true. When I did Knights, I had the Rangers on some runs when I'm watching the game.
Yeah, how did you do that, looking back?
You know what I did? Doug Descher, who used to work here, used to be our great behind-the-scenes guy with all the audio. He made a sounder for me that went off, and it was like, Zach's getting distracted by the Rangers again. And we would play that, because I would, and with the Rangers goal horn, because I would freak out on the air when that did transpire. That was a long at-bat, though. I saw Lindor was up, and then I saw the ball was out in right field, and it felt like 2 minutes to go by. So Francisco Lindor, who has been sensational, giving the Mets a big jump and a big bolt of energy right out of the gate in a game that they have to win. And let me tell you, it's weird how much confidence I have with this team, where they got punched in the mouth last night and dragged all around the field last night. But I'm very confident that they're going to win today. And I got tickets for Wednesday and Thursday, so games 3 and 4. So I would very, very, very much enjoy this being 1-1. And then the environment for a game 3 is just going to be absolutely bonkers. So, geez. Who would you go with MVP right now, Stu? Would you go with Watt? Would you go with Henry? Or do you go with one of these? Like, if I had to pick a quarterback, you know, Love is in the conversation, even though he missed 2 games. Goff, I guess, could be in the conversation. But I think of the running backs first there. Josh Allen, if he, you know, the last 2 weeks, I think he'll be there at the end of the year. Lamar, I would go Henry over him. C.J. Stroud is obviously someone that jumps out. I'm not going Purdy or Darnold. But right now, I would say Henry is the MVP of the league, and then I would put T.J. Watt in at number 2. And that, to me, the offensive player of the year right now is Henry. The defensive player of the year is T.J. Watt, and that should translate into MVP votes for both of them. It's stupid that we just go quarterback, quarterback, quarterback now.
I would go Henry, personally. I just think what he's done in the running game and kind of given that offense a bit of a jolt after, like I said, just an awful end to their season, bringing him in and maybe the offense is even better now. Like, I think I would
It is better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how you stop them in the red zone. I really don't, because you don't know where the ball's going to, and it's so tricky for a defender. All righty, we'll take a timeout. When we come on back, we'll get into the Nick Sirianni stuff. And I have not heard this audio yet, but it just happened about 15 minutes ago. Nick Sirianni apologized in front of the media today in his post-game, in his press conference today for his antics after the game. That's at least the headline that I saw. We will hear that audio when we come on back, but it is being dubbed as a Nick Sirianni apology. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Alrighty, rocking and rolling on a Monday. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Bobby Carpenter going to join us coming up in 40 minutes from now. We'll recap that Ohio State-Oregon game, Penn State-USC, and talk about a few other college football items from this past weekend. But first up, without further ado, or excuse me, I was about to toss the news brief there. I don't know why there.
You got me. I was like, what's happening?
I was like, we already did the news brief. See, this is what happens. I'm watching the Met-Dodger game. My brain is spinning a million miles an hour. And I was about to say, without further ado, I'm not talking about Freddie Adu. Let's update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. And let's get to a news brief. And I looked down at my rundown. I'm like, we already did the news brief. You know why it was? I'm distracted by the Mets game. And then we're going to throw to audio here when it comes to Nick Sirianni. So in my brain, I guess that just calculated that, oh, Zach, we're going to go to a news brief here. There was also a while, I don't know why, whenever we'd have a long, when I did the nights, whenever there'd be like a long top of the hour segment, and sometimes I would run late, I would get to the end and I'd be like, all right, let's get to the latest update. Here's the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. And Hickey would get in my ear and be like, dude, it's 8:20. What are you doing right now? You got to take a break, come back, do another segment, and then go to the update. So sorry, I was in my Cowboys first half form right there to start this segment. I'll turn it around, though. The Cowboys, they will not. Alrighty. So the Eagles-Browns game. I said this going into the weekend, that not only did the Eagles have to win, but they had to win with style points. The Eagles had to win, and they had to cover the spread. Because just finding a way to just eke out a win up against the Cleveland Browns, who are a dreadful football team, who are a football team that is absolutely lost. There's a problem with the coach and the quarterback right now. That team has too much talent through 6 weeks of the season to only have 1 win. That's just the fact of the matter here. So that team is just mentally fried. However, that Eagles team, they were 10-1 to start the season a year ago. They won 1 game down the stretch, and they have lost that it factor about them. Where 2 years ago, they were in a Super Bowl, where at halftime, they were up by 10, and they were outplaying Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, and they couldn't slam the door shut. And even in a 10-1 start last year, they weren't playing great football, but they were still winning games. So you were like, okay, when they figure it out and they play their best, oh, they're really going to be firing. But then down the stretch, they had so many problems in that locker room and no leadership. And a head coach who, let's be real, he's like a big child who is a doormat. And he's just getting walked all over in his own locker room. And they won 1 game down the stretch and they lost in the wild card round to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And this offseason, a lot came out about this coach and Nick Sirianni. A lot came out about Nick Sirianni and his lack of relationship with Jalen Hurts. And the locker room, in my opinion, made it clear that we like Nick Sirianni because he's a player's coach, but do they respect him? And they could say they respect him, but they walk all over him. And I really did think that the Eagles did Sirianni a disservice by bringing him back because he's an offensive-minded coach who doesn't call the plays. They've handed over the offense to Kellen Moore, and it seems like he's running Sirianni's offense, but it's just Moore calling the plays. You brought in another defensive coordinator in Vic Fangio, who has been a head coach before and is a respected voice in this league, but the defense hasn't been all that special. It's like you look around this team, he's the head coach, but he doesn't call the plays, and he's a head coach that doesn't really communicate all that much with the quarterback. They had to have like meetings during the bye week, I guess, to smooth over this relationship. And this head coach, to me, is just like a head coach in title, but in reality, he's a babysitter, and he can't even babysit properly because his entire team imploded down the stretch last year. So it's one thing to lose, or it's one thing to be disappointing, and then it's another thing to be embarrassing. And Nick Sirianni has now become embarrassing when, even after they win, a dude that used to be in lockstep with this fan base, right? And would used to do quirky things, but it would reflect the city. And it would be someone that Eagles fans, who they did not like at first, ended up loving. Now that is all quickly out the window. Because when you're not playing at a satisfactory level, you can't act like a petulant douche. Okay? And that's what Nick Sirianni did yesterday. They were lucky. And sometimes you'd rather be lucky than good. But yesterday, you almost wish that the Eagles weren't lucky and they lost that game, because then every show today would be saying, okay, Jeffrey Lurie has to fire the coach. But here's the thing. They won the game, and every show today is also saying they have to fire the coach. Because that coach should have just walked off the field and should have just shut up. And right? It would have been something where you don't feel great about the team's performance, but you don't make it worse than what it was. And you could just say, hey, we got to be better. We won the game. We rather have these performances where we win and fix on those things, and then we'll become an even better team. But since there's been a lot of noise surrounding Nick Sirianni since the offseason, and deservedly so, he elected after the game, when the game was wrapping up, to point to the fans and basically do like, hey, what do you got to say now? You know, all you guys were booing us, you guys gave up on us, and we won the game, as if he was actually proud of the way that his football team performed yesterday. Because the goal isn't just to beat the Cleveland Browns, the goal is to go win a Super Bowl. And I'll tell you this, this team has the talent to win the Super Bowl, but they ain't winning a Super Bowl with this dude as the head coach. You know, do you see Andy Reid acting this way? Do you see Sean McDermott, who has said some stupid things, but do you see him act this way on the sidelines? Do you see Sean McVay act this way on the sidelines? Kyle Shanahan, Kevin O'Connell. Like, I'm just running through coaches. I think we could run through all 32 coaches in the league. Even Dan Campbell, who is clearly exuberant. Would he ever taunt his own fan base? And this is Philadelphia. This isn't like, you're not the coach of the LA Chargers, where they barely have a fan base. This is a team where the fan base is so passionate. And you're going to taunt them after you barely beat a dreadful, and I mean a dreadful, Cleveland Browns team? Like, Nick Sirianni, shut the hell up, go into your locker room, talk to your team, talk to the media, and don't be an embarrassment. And it's crazy that I could say this about a coach that 2 years ago was coaching in a Super Bowl. He is not fit to be an NFL head coach. And all the magic that he had in Philadelphia has now evaporated since that 10-1 start a season ago. That's one of the worst collapses I've ever seen in the NFL. And it's not like you've had some strong start to this season. And you're going to not only go after your fans at the end of the game, but then you bring your kids to the podium So you think all the tough Philadelphia media is not going to ask you the tough questions? And you had a press conference where he was just rambling. And it sounded like he was like emotionally unstable to be an NFL head coach. I watched the entirety of that press conference. I was like, Jeffrey Lurie, go get your court gesture off the stage. I thought he was doing like stand-up comedy that was just bombing. It was uncomfortable. It was cringeworthy. And it was extremely awkward. So let's hear Nick Sirianni. He was asked about going back and forth with the fans yesterday, which is just like JV9 behavior. You know, I expect that from like a high school football coach that thinks he's, you know, hot stuff and right is trying to relive his glory days on a high school sideline when he's like 45 years old coach of the team. That's what you saw that yesterday from Nick Sirianni, who has paid millions of dollars to coach a football team. And he acted like a child. So here is Nick Sirianni and going back and forth with Eagles fans yesterday.
We thrive off the crowd when they cheer for us. That's all I'll say. Like when our crowd cheers for us, we thrive off them, you know. And, you know, we hear them when they boo. We don't necessarily like it. I don't think that's productive for anybody. But, you know, when they cheer for us and when we got them rolling, you know, we love it.
Think about how soft the Eagles have become. That's a fan base that's known for booing. And the booing is to hold people accountable. I'll never forget the first game after they won the Super Bowl. They are playing at home up against the Falcons. The Eagles got booed off the field at halftime because it was a lethargic effort. And after the game, Malcolm Jenkins said to the media, I'm just glad that our fans didn't get spoiled because I thought winning a championship means they wouldn't boo anymore, and I'm glad that they still booed because they should have booed us in the first half with that performance. That's a dude that gets it. And then Nick Sirianni is going to say the booing isn't productive? You really want to isolate yourself from the fan base? You really want to show me that you don't understand Philadelphia and you don't have the mental toughness to be a head coach in this league? Oh, our fans were booing. Play better. You don't want them to boo? Have your team play better. Because it's not like it was just one game. Your offense has been lousy since that team started 10-1 a year ago. They have been a lousy offense with enough talent. It's not like you don't have the talent. But oh, God forbid they boo the fans. Here is Nick Sirianni when he was asked on the team's slow starts that are turning into an habitual problem on the offensive side of the ball.
Because y'all are making a big deal about it. I mean, is it like, guys, we're going to figure it out. We're going to fix it. We've known how to score in the past. Like, we get it. You guys have a job to do, and you're going to fixate on one thing, and you're going to be like, oh, they haven't started fast, or they haven't turned the ball over. Like, we got it. Like, we're going to do everything we can do to fix it. Like, and I don't want that to be in their heads. That's why I'm basically telling you guys, all right, we got it. We'll figure it out. Like, the defense started their ass off. The defense started their ass. It was 10-0 to start the football game off, and the defense didn't let up a play. And so they played their so they started fast, right? And we'll get it figured out on offense. We will get it figured out on offense. Do you think that was funny?
And he's saying you think that's funny because his three kids at the podium, they were laughing. They were laughing at their father because he was cursing and he was freaking out and he was going nuts. Nick Sirianni can't do, oh, we'll get it figured out on offense. This has now been almost a full season where you haven't got it figured out. Because it goes back to the second half of last year and through the first half of this season, your offense continues to look lethargic and disappointing. This dude, right, used to get the city of Philadelphia. This dude used to press the right buttons. But now with adversity, he's thinking he's above the city and he thinks he understands the city when he doesn't. You're complaining about booing. You're chastising the media for basically asking about the slow starts on offense. You know what it reminds me of? Reminds me of Chris Greer. When Chris Greer got up in front of the podium this year, before the season started, it was like, oh, you guys care more about the offensive line issues than we do. We'll be fine. The offensive line's fine. And look how that turned out. And Sirianni had his Chris Greer moment the other day. This dude just don't get it. He just doesn't get it. Doesn't. And you're employing a child, a big baby right now, as your head coach. And the organization emasculated him before the start of the season anyway. You're not calling the plays. You know, you don't communicate to the quarterback. That's for Kellen Moore. It's like, what do you do? And you can't even manage your locker room. You can't even talk to the media the right way. So I have not heard this yet, but I saw it on social media that Nick Sirianni had a press conference today, and it's being kind of dubbed as an apology for his actions yesterday. I have not heard this audio. Santer gave me a look where he's like, I don't even know if it's really that much of an apology, but let's listen up. This is Nick Sirianni a few moments ago.
What I was really doing, I was trying to bring energy yesterday, energy, enthusiasm yesterday. And I'm sorry and disappointed on how my energy was directed at the end of the game. And my energy should be all in on coaching, motivating, right, and celebrating with our guys. And so, you know, that's, you know, and I got to have better wisdom and discernment of when to use that energy. And that wasn't the time.
Okay. But you're an NFL coach. You're not a college coach. You know, maybe Nick Sirianni, when he gets fired by the Eagles at the end of the year, go coach college. Because that shtick could work in college. It doesn't work in the NFL. And it's wild where this guy, who he walked into the job, was terrible to start, then turned the team around, made the playoffs when they shouldn't have made the playoffs, then got to the Super Bowl, and then last year starts off 10-1. How quickly all that positive momentum has just evaporated. Because that's how detrimental he's been. And what does he do to fix a problem? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I will not toss the news brief here, but I will toss to an update. And when we do come on back, we got to get to a little onside, offside, standing by with the latest Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash, El Capitan, Marco Belletti.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
Oh, my God. Mark Vientos hit a grand slam, and the Mets are up 6-0 early against the Dodgers. Oh. If you could have seen the show when we were in break, I was screaming. I walked in the newsroom. Hickey was screaming, and I said, soft handshake, because I think if Hickey and I slammed hands the way that it was going, either my hand would have broke or his hand would have been broke.
Most likely his, I would say.
I don't know about that, actually.
Really?
When the Mets played the Braves, that game where Lindor hit the home run to right field to take that lead in the ninth, I walked into the newsroom and I saw Hickey throw a chair in elation.
Oh, that's right. He did do that, yeah.
And then I went to go give him like a fist pump and he was emotionally blacked out. He didn't even realize I was standing right in front of him. And I'm not like a puny man. I'm 6'4" and a lot of man that comes with Zach Gill. And Hickey didn't even see me standing in front of him. That's a different level of sports psycho. I take Hickey. But anyway, onside, offside time. Bobby Carpenter going to join us 15 minutes from now. What do you got for me today, Stewart?
All right, Zach. Well, Tua hasn't played for the Dolphins since suffering that gruesome concussion in week 2 against the Bills. However, this week, head coach Mike McDaniel made it pretty clear whether or not we'll see Tua back on the field this season.
Continued to be positive. There's still information that he's seeking this week. As far as timelines go, I know he's not playing this week, and I do expect to see him playing football in 2024, but where that is exactly, we'll let the process continue.
So onsides, offsides, the Dolphins can still make the playoffs this season if Tua comes back in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, they could still make the playoffs. I think that it would go for one more week, right, and then he would come back. You know, when he's first eligible, that's what I would anticipate. They could still make the playoffs, but I don't think it's necessarily because I think the Dolphins are all that great, but it's more so because the AFC, it's open, right? There's been a lot of teams that have struggled. The Jets have struggled out of the gate. You know, you take a glance at the Bengals, they've struggled out of the gate. The Browns have been horrendous. So there's been teams that we thought, you know, the Jaguars, they're 1-5. There are teams that we thought were going to be solid, and they haven't. So they could still make the playoffs, but also what kind of version are you going to get of Tua behind that offensive line as well? Like, I picked them to miss the playoffs before the season started. Behind that offensive line, like, one more hit, and then we're talking about Tua being out for the rest of the season. I know people say his career, but every time they have that career conversation, he ends up keep on playing. So can they still make the playoffs if Tua comes back in the next couple of weeks? I will say onside, but I don't feel great about it.
All right, well, sticking in the AFC East, your Patriots dropped their game against the Texans. But Drake May looked pretty decent in his first start. The third overall pick passed for 243 yards, three touchdowns, and two picks, leading the Patriots to their most points in a game this season. So onside, offside, Drake May will be the Pats starter for at least the next 5 years.
The Patriots had three passing touchdowns. Three passing touchdowns. That's incredible. That's how low my level of expectations are for this team. The line sucks. They're pulling guys off other teams' practice squads, and then they're starting for the Patriots. This line is horrible, and they don't have enough skill position players. But Drake May did more with less. So when I was watching him, I saw a little Josh Allen. I saw a little Justin Herbert as well. I think the Patriots have their quarterback, but now they got to invest in that offensive line and get him some skill position players to actually throw the ball to. That will be the task this offseason. So if you put a gun to my head, will May be there for five seasons? Yeah, I think so, even though that's like crazy to say after one game. But I like what I did see in a very small sample size the other day, so I will go on sides.
All right, the Hassan Reddick situation is still unsolved, but a few new developments might end the holdout. Now, last week, Reddick and his agent parted ways, and then he hired a new one this weekend and plans to meet with the team after tonight's game against the Bills. So onsides, offsides, adding Reddick back into the mix won't change much for the reeling Jets.
Well, they brought in Drew Rosenhaus. I would still be surprised if they get a deal done to get Hassan back on the field. Maybe the Detroit Lions come calling and that could save this whole scenario. I saw EJ Stewart from Maggie and Perloff suggest that was a good suggestion by EJ. But adding Reddick back into the mix won't change much for the reeling Jets. I'm actually going to go on sides here, and here's why. The Jets have a good defense. Now, they could use more of a pass rush, and Reddick would bring that. But the offensive line still stinks. Aaron Rodgers is still basically playing on one leg at the age of 40, and there's a chemistry problem. So Reddick isn't on the offensive side of the ball. That's why I don't think getting Reddick back, if they even do, would change much for the reeling Jets. So when you say adding Reddick back into the mix won't change much for the reeling Jets, I will go on sides.
Now, Texas smacked Oklahoma in the Red River Shootout this weekend, smoking their rival 34-3. After the game, Longhorn players planted a Texas flag through a Baker Mayfield jersey, harkening back to when Baker planted an OU flag at Ohio State. Yesterday, Baker responded.
That's just a kid from Austin, Texas that went to Oklahoma and won his last two Red River games and being rent-free in their heads for almost a decade now. So, yeah, it's a good feeling.
So onsides, offsides, you have a problem with what the Texas players did on Saturday.
Yeah, I do onsides. Like, have a little respect. Baker Mayfield's a legend. Baker Mayfield is one of the great college quarterbacks of all time, and his play in that rivalry speaks for itself. So go after the players on the other team, not past players on the other team. That's what didn't make any sense to me, and it's amazing how they bring the Baker Mayfield jersey out onto the field and then plant the flag through the jersey. Like, unless I missed something and Baker said something before the game, which I don't think he did, I just think that's stupid. Like, there has to be some respect for the legends of this sport. And those players had no part in what Baker Mayfield did up against Texas. So why are you like, oh, this is for our guys that couldn't beat Baker, that's what we're doing it for? That just seems silly and stupid to me. So I do have a problem with that. Onsides.
Now, after dropping their first game of the season to USC, LSU and Brian Kelly have reeled off five straight wins, including Saturday's impressive 29-26 overtime win against Ole Miss. The Tigers moved up to eighth in the polls, just one spot behind Alabama, and host the Tide in just 3 weeks. Onsides, offsides, LSU will beat Bama at home on November 9th.
LSU could score in Alabama's defense because Alabama's defense is a problem, but can their defense find a way to slow down the Alabama offense? And that would be my biggest concern. And Ole Miss's offense has been overrated, as we saw a few weeks ago up against Kentucky. So LSU will beat Bama at home on November 9th. I'll still take the Crimson Tide there because with Brian Kelly at LSU, there's been some good moments. There's been some bad moments. They just got a nice victory, so then they'll probably lose in a few weeks. So I will go offside when you ask me. LSU will beat Alabama at home on November 9th.
Offside.
Dylan Gabriel in Oregon moved up to number 2 in the polls thanks to their epic 32-31 win over the Buckeyes on Saturday. Gabriel threw for 341 yards and 2 touchdowns and added another score on the ground. Gabriel leaped ahead of Cam Ward in the Heisman odds and sits behind just Ashton Gentry after the Boise star ripped off another 217 yards. Just incredible. Onside, offsides. If Oregon wins the Big Ten, Dylan Gabriel should win the Heisman.
Definitely should be a finalist, could win it. But I can't say right now that just because he wins the Big Ten means he will definitely win the Heisman. When Ashton Gentry, even though you could say, oh, he just plays for Boise State, but he's on pace right now for 2,496 yards and 36 total touchdowns, which is just stupid. And I saw Travis Hunter unfortunately got hurt this past weekend as well, as Kansas State just survived up against Colorado. So if Oregon wins the Big Ten, Gabriel should win the Heisman. I'm not ready to go there yet, but he's definitely going to be in the mix. So I will say offside.
Offside.
All right, last one here, Zach. The Mets' magic seemed to have run out just for a night,
though.
Yeah,
that's a premature question.
Yeah, they got crushed by the Dodgers 9-0 game one, but are currently up 6-0 in the second inning in game two. So onsides, offsides, despite the Dodgers' dominance in game one, you're still confident in your Mets to win this series.
Yeah, like, did the sport fan get so soft all of a sudden? I've seen my team down in hockey three games to one and come on back. Like, I said today going into this one, I thought the Mets absolutely would win. And it's only 6-0 right now. There's still a lot of game left with the Mets bullpen. There's still a lot of work to do. But there was no doubt in my mind today that the Mets were winning this game. Because anytime this team gets punched and this team gets knocked down, they get off the mat, they come back swinging hard, and they counter with some big punches. So this idea that the Mets' magic ran out after one loss, like, give me a break. And look, 6-0 here. This is a premature question. And you know what? I got two Yankee fans on the other side of the glass in Santa and Stu, so that's why these garbage questions get asked on this show. So despite the Dodgers' dominance, still confident in your Mets' ability to win the World Series? Yeah, I'm confident. I'm not going to say it's a lock they win the World Series, but I like what I'm seeing out of this team. This team has great team chemistry, and they just have a magic flair to them. But let's keep it going. Let's keep calm. One game at a time. You're up 6-0. Go on out there and win this one. Bobby Carpenter joins us next. We're talking college football at his Zach Gelb Show.